All right.
Okay, we are ready to go then. I'd like to call to order the August 29th meeting of the River Grove Water District on Zoom, and it is 4:31. First thing I'm going to do is welcome Mr. McPherson, who is here as a guest. Otherwise, I think he's the only guest we have. Auditor's report, Russ, nicely done, and it's all yours.
Thank you very much. Again, hello everyone. My name is Russell Reese, managing partner with Gerard Siebert Pollard CPAs here in Westland, Oregon. Pleased to provide result in 2022 audit of River Grove Water District. I'm going to cover two things very quickly, and then I'll open it up for any specific questions that anyone might have on the financials. I was going to go over the what's called the post, or it's the communication with those charged with governance at the conclusion of the audit. Well, I think we went through this a couple of years ago, and maybe last year, where I cover five or six different areas and let you know whether or not there were any issues. In regards to performing our audit with management. And then I'll cover the financial statement audit. So the communication with those charged with governance, it starts off by talking about significant matters. We let management and the board know that management is responsible for the selection and use of appropriate accounting policies, and that the significant accounting policies used by River Grove Water are described in footnote A to the financial statements. We are also then letting you know that other than GASB 87, which was it's the new lease accounting standards for municipal entities, no new accounting policies were adopted, and the application of existing policies were not changed during 2022. When I go through the draft or the audit report, I'll touch on the effects that GASB 87 had on River Grove's financials for this last year. So that was the big accounting change for 2022, for fiscal year 2022. We're also supposed to let you know whether or not we encountered any difficulties in performing our audit. We're pleased to report that we encountered no significant difficulties in dealing with management in performing and completing our audit. We're supposed to let you know of any corrected and uncorrected misstatements. If we had any misstatements which we felt were immaterial, we would attach that past adjustment schedule to our management representation letter and provide a copy to the board as well. We're pleased to report that not only were there no past adjustments, but I do not believe that we proposed any adjustments to the books of River Grove Water for this last year. So again, a job well done by management. Disagreements with management. We're supposed to let you know whether or not we had any disagreements with management in regards to any financial accounting, reporting, or auditing matter. And again, we're pleased to report, as in prior years, we had no such disagreements with management that arose during the course of our audit. We also let you know that management makes representations which are encapsulated in a management rep letter that we maintain in our file. And the management representation letter, again, provides information, not any pertinent information that they're aware of that could have an effect on the financials or the audit. And again, that is a standard letter that is issued and again, maintained in the file for this engagement year. That's the meat of that communication. So again, I call that a clean. There were no significant issues that were noted in the communication, other than letting you know that, again, the district implemented GASB 87, the lease accounting standards. It did have minimal impact on the district's financial statements, because the district, again, accounts and prepares its financials under a special purpose framework, or the cash basis of accounting. So the new lease accounting standard basically resulted in some additional footnote disclosures, which I'll cover when I go through the audit report. I'm going to flip over to page 2, which is the first page of our independent auditor's report. Again, there were some new accounting or some new auditing standards that were adopted, which required a different presentation of the independent auditor's report. So again, it's a three-page report, which I believe was a three-page in the prior year. But you'll note that the first subheading on our independent auditor's report now is the opinions that are being issued, because that's really the meat of our report. So when you look on page two at the top, you'll notice that the first subheading is opinions. So right off the bat, we're letting the readers know what type of opinion that we're issuing on the district's financial statements for June 30, 2022. So in the second paragraph, it states that in our opinion, the financial statements above present fairly in all material respects the respective cash basis financial position of the business type activities of River Grove Water as of June 30, 2022, and the respective changes in cash basis financial position for the year then ended in accordance with the cash basis of accounting described in Note A. So again, the district is receiving a clean or unmodified opinion on its financials, which is it's the best type of an opinion that we can issue on your financial statements. You then note at the middle of the page, there's an emphasis of matter paragraph, again, letting the reader know that the financials are accounted for on the cash basis of accounting, which is a basis of accounting other than accounting principles generally accepted in the USA, and that our opinions are not modified with respect to that matter. There's then subheadings regarding responsibilities of management for the financials, and then our auditor's responsibility for the audit of the financial statements. Turning to page three, I just wanted to point out that under this new format, we are required to note towards the middle of the page, it says in performing an audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards or GAS, that we're required to exercise professional judgment. We are to identify and assess the risks of material misstatement of the financial statements, whether due to fraud or error. We're required to obtain an understanding of the internal control relevant to the audit in order to design audit procedures that are appropriate in the circumstances. We're also required to evaluate the appropriateness of accounting policies used and the reasonableness of significant accounting estimates made by management. And this is the big one. Conclude whether in our judgment there are conditions or events considered in the aggregate that raise substantial doubt about River Grove Water District's ability to continue as a going concern for a reasonable period of time. So under the new audit standards, auditors are now required to comment on whether or not there are conditions or events which could raise substantial doubt about the ability of an auditee to continue as a going concern. So it's a going concern comment, which is now squarely placed on the independent auditor's report. So you'll note that throughout the footnotes, there's no mention, we evaluated the financial stability of the organization or the district and did not feel that nothing rose to the level of a conditional event that we would consider to indicate that there was any type of a going concern issue. So that's that. Under supplementary information, law to opine on the supplementary information. So the last sentence in that paragraph notes that in our opinion, the combining and individual non-major fund financial statements are fairly stated in all material respects in relation to the basic financial statements as a whole. So again, another clean or unmodified opinion. And then finally on page four, we have our report on other legal and regulatory requirements. This is the minimum standards for audits of Oregon municipal corporations. Well, we let the reader know that we have issued another report, which will be dated to correspond with the management rep letter date, it says, in our consideration of River Grove Water's compliance with certain provisions of laws and regulations, including the provisions of Oregon revised statutes as specified in Oregon administrative rules. And I'll cover that briefly at the conclusion of the audit report. But again, this relates to the standard minimum standards for audits of Oregon Municipal Corporation report that's contained at the back of the audit report. And again, we will date the report to coincide with the date of the management rep letter, which will be sent out here shortly. Again, I sign individually as a partner, as not all the partners here are licensed municipal auditors. So when that occurs, you have not only a firm signature, but then you have the partner signature. I'm the one that has the municipal auditor's license. I thought what I would then do is just quickly cover the two basic financial statements of River Grove Water. So I'm flipping over to page 7. And in page 7, again, is the statement of net position, again, on the cash basis. So the district, being on the cash basis, really has only two sections that it reports. It has its assets section, and it has its resulting net position section, which the net position is assets less any liabilities that have been incurred as of the end of the fiscal year. So again, starting with our asset category, the district had cash, unrestricted cash of $1,867,442. We had some minor restricted cash of $52,287, resulting in total current assets at June 30, 2022 of $1,919,729. Our net position, because we have no liabilities to subtract, our net position equals our assets. And in our net position, we have two subcategories. We have net position that's restricted for system development. That amount equated to $1,410,342 at June 30. And then our unrestricted net position balance at June 30 was $509,387. Turning to page 8, we have our second basic financial statement, and that is the statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in net position, again, on the cash basis, for the year ended June 30, 2022. This statement starts off with our operating revenues and expenses to come up with operating income. We then add to that or subtract from it any non-operating net revenues or expenses, and that results in our net income for the year. So starting with operating revenues, the district recognized total operating revenues, include water revenue and service installations, system development charges, and miscellaneous revenues, totaling $1,047,412. Under operating expenses, we had personal services of $266,370 and materials and services of $410,350, resulting in total operating expenses for the year of $676,720. When we subtract our operating expenses from our operating revenues, we had operating income of $370,692 for the year then ended. To that, we apply our non-operating revenues, which encompassed loan proceeds of $346,742, capital outlay expenditures or expenses of $311,310, interest income of $8,911, and then our annual required debt service payments of $53,414, resulting in a net non-operating expense of $9,071. So when we apply our total non-operating revenues, our net expense, to our operating income, it resulted in net income for the year of $361,621. Pages 9 through 16 are our required footnote disclosures. And I was real simply, as most of the footnotes are consistent with prior year, I was simply going to point out, let's see. again, just some updated information. So again, turning to page 12, at the bottom footnote C is our cash and investment schedule. So as of June 30, 2022, this footnote was updated to reflect that our cash with Banner Bank was $180,388. We had water deposits of $52,285. And then we had funds with the local government investment pool at June 30 of $1,667,056. So again, our total cash and investments at the end of the year was $1,919,729. Flipping to page 14, again, towards the bottom, we've updated footnote E, which is the district's long-term debt footnote. Again, showing the changes in long-term debt for the year ended June 30, 2022. Again, the district started off with an outstanding principal balance at the beginning of the year of 58. Principal paid during the year was $35,277, resulting in outstanding principal at the end of the fiscal year of $434,581, of which, looking forward for the next fiscal year, the principal that is due for 2022-23 totals $36,639. Turning to page 15, we've also updated that the top footnote E, which again shows the future debt service requirements on that debt. So again, it's a five-year lookout. And then after the five-year lookout, blocks of additional 5 years of any principal and interest that's due are presented. So again, the footnote shows total principal outstanding at the end of this last fiscal year, the interest that'll be paid starting with next fiscal year, going out to 2032, which totals $97,090. So our total principal and interest looking out from 2023 through 2032 totals $531,670. I then wanted to simply point out the footnote H, which is a new footnote on page 16. This is in regards to our new GASB 87. In a nutshell, what GASB 87 is doing with leases is if districts have a non-cancelable leases in excess of 1 year, under GAAP, what the requirement is that the districts would recognize that what is called a right of use asset or an intangible asset. They have the right to use this leased asset for a period of time, which also results in a liability, which is the obligation that the district or a district would have, which is accounted for under the present value of the lease payments to be paid over the term. So footnote H provides some information to the reader that, again, the district adopted GASB 87. And in implementing GASB 87 towards the middle of the page, it lets the readers know that the implementation of GASB 87 would have had the following effect on net position as reported, again, at the beginning of the prior year, June 30, 2021, if the district accounted under U.S. GAAP. So what the adjustment would have been if the district was on full accrual was the district would have recognized an asset, again, the intangible asset, the right of use asset for the leasing of its office space. That value is about $91,384 with a corresponding lease liability, again, of the same amount, the $91,384. And then down towards the bottom, it provides information to the reader on the required lease liability and related interest payments that would have been recognized had the district been doing its accounting under full accrual, under full GAAP. So again, that is new. So in essence, really what GASB 87 is doing for your district, because you are not on full accrual, is you're just required to provide certain information on within the footnotes as far as what would have the adjustment would have been if you were on full accrual? And then what are the annual requirements to amortize this lease liability and the related interest on that intangible asset and lease liability? So again, I really did not have any effect on the bottom line of the district for this last year. will it have any effect going forward as well? I thought what I'd close with is looking at some of the budget to actual activity, and then to close with the Oregon, the minimum standards report. So I'm turning to page 19, which is our, again, now we're into our supplementary information. So on page 19, we have our schedule of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance, budget to actual. This is strictly just the general fund. So the general fund, again, had total revenues budgeted of $988,020. Actual revenues came in at $999,158 for a positive budget variance of $11,138. Under our expenditures, the district had budgeted $944,200 in expenditures. And actual expenses only came in at $695,534. So we had, again, a positive budget variance of $248,666. We did have a budget over expenditure in materials and services. But again, the over expenditure was only $1,250. And again, that type of situation occurs all the time. And the amount, you may or may not get a letter from the state. I highly doubt it because of the amount. It's so immaterial that I think they're just going to pass on that. So again, on a budget basis for the for the general fund, the district had budgeted excess revenues over expenditures of $43,820. Actual revenues over expenditures came in at $303,624. So again, we had a positive budget variance of $259,804. Our fund balances as of the beginning of the year, the district had budgeted $335,000. The beginning fund balance for the general fund actually came in at $431,135. So we were adding to our positive budget variance of $96,135. So our fund balance as of the end of the year, the district had budgeted $95,820. Actual ending fund balance came in at $451,759 for, again, a positive budget variance of $355,939. I'll just cover the capital improvements SDC fund. The unemployment fund really only had interest income and some transfers, so minimal activity. So on page 20, the capital improvements SDC fund, the district had budgeted revenues of $55,200. Actual revenues came in at $56,856 for, again, a positive budget variance of $16,056. Total expenditures budget was $680,506. Actual expenditures only came in at $345,910 for a large positive budget variance of $334,596. So again, in looking at excess expenditures over revenues, the district had budgeted $625,306. Actual expenditures in excess of revenues came in at $289,54 for, again, a positive budget variance of $336,252. Under other financing sources, the district had budgeted loan proceeds of $100,000. Actual receipts came in at $346,742. So again, another positive budget variance under other financing sources of $246,742, resulting in a total excess of revenues and other sources over or under revenues. So on a budget basis, the district had budgeted expenditures in excess of revenues of $250,306. Actual revenues in excess of expenditures came in at $332,688 for a positive budget variance of $582,994. And when we apply our positive budget variance for our beginning of year fund balance of $90,782, results in a end of year fund balance, again, budget of $736,566, actual ending fund balance of $1,410,342 for an overall positive budget variance of $673,776. So I'm just going to close with just kind of quickly covering pages 23 and 24. That this is our independent auditor's report required by Oregon state regulations or the Oregon minimum standards. And I'm sure we talked about this last year as well. So besides doing an audit of the financial statements, we're also required to review compliance and any internal control issues related to certain areas that pertain specifically to operations of Oregon municipal corporations. We take a look at the depositing of public funds. We look at whether or not the district has exceeded any indebtedness limitations, restrictions, and repayment. We look at the budget process for both the current year and the subsequent budget year. We look at insurance and fidelity bonds in force. We look at the authorized investment of any surplus funds. And then we also look at any public contracts and purchasing. So you'll note towards the bottom of the page that in connection with our testing, nothing came to our attention that caused us to believe the River Grove Water District was not in substantial compliance with certain provisions of laws, regulations, contracts, and grants, including the provisions of ORS, Oregon Revised Statutes as specified in Oregon Administrative Rules 16210 through 16210-320 of the Oregon of the minimum standards for audits of Oregon municipal corporations, except materials and service expenditures exceeded appropriations by $1,250 in the general fund. So again, I wouldn't get too excited about that. We're required to report it in looking at the budgeting for this last fiscal year. But again, with my experience, oftentimes this type of situation does occur. And so I don't get too concerned about that situation. We then are required to comment under OAR 16210 about internal control. So if during the course of our audit, in getting an understanding of the controls and any changes to the controls during the year, if during that, doing that process and then performing our other audit procedures, if something was to come to our attention that led us to believe that there was a deficiency in internal control, which either rises to the level of a significant deficiency or a material weakness, which is it's either a significant deficiency or a combination of significant deficiencies that rise to a level to what's called a material weakness in internal control. That situation again is a combination of deficiencies in internal control such that there is a reasonable possibility that a material misstatement of the entity's financial statements will not be prevented or detected and corrected on a timely basis. We did not note any situations that arose that would require us to, again, report under that particular situation. So under this report, again, the district is receiving a clean or unmodified opinion. We're not reporting on any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in internal control for the district. Again, this is a restricted report. The report is solely for the information and use of the Board of Commissioners, management of River Grove Water, and the Oregon Secretary of State, and is not intended to be and should not be used by anyone other than those parties. So it's a restricted report, but again, it is a clean or unmodified. We're not reporting any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in internal control as a result of performing our audit on the district for this year. That's all I had to cover tonight. I guess at this point, I was going to open it up to any specific questions. And if there aren't any specific questions now, but later on something does arise, feel free to contact me or email me. And I'd be pleased to go over any of the financial information or the footnotes or either of the independent auditor's report or the minimum standards report to provide you with any additional insight that you might need. But again, in performing our field work, the records were in impeccable shape. Janine had everything reconciled and ready to go. I think our field work was maybe 3/4 of a day at the most. So again, everything was ready to go. The accounting records look fine. Again, like I noted I don't think we propose any adjusting journal entries. So all the accounts were reconciled accurately and timely. And I wish some of our other smaller districts had as tight of accounting controls that your district does have, because it makes our job a lot easier coming in and but again, we come in with professional skepticism, so we are looking. But again, as with prior years, everything was in great, great shape.
We have two questions for you, Russ. Sure. First from Jim and then from Larry.
Okay.
Russ, mine is not so much an accounting question as the last paragraph there. This report is not public record. Is that correct? It's for our use, but if somebody were to make a request for it, we wouldn't have to provide it. Is that correct?
No, actually, I think when you have to, because the district has to submit this report to the secretary or the audits division with the state of Oregon. So they upload the entire report. So the report is available to be viewed by the public, but the public is not able, they're not able to rely on, and I don't really know why they would rely on this particular report. But you know, it is public information.
Okay.
But yeah, but again, it's for they can't use it in order to, and I'm trying to think of a situation where that would arise.
Russell, you had a frozen.
Oh,
we couldn't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Everything beyond your response to Jim's question was not audible for us. Well, Russ, bottom line, it's just a little confusing when you read that statement and you think maybe it's not public record. I have no problem with it being public record. I just wanted to clarify that. So thanks.
Yeah. It is goofy, but it's called a restricted report. So again, it's out there, but the restriction is there so that the general public can't use that to come back on you for. And I'm trying to think of a situation that would occur, and I can't think of anything.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Larry, did you have a question?
Can you hear me?
You're breaking up now.
Uh-oh. I think I lost him.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I had two questions for you, Russell. First of all, on page 6 of your report, it said under capital assets, it says the district acquired the following during 2022, reservoir number 3, $292,080. And that's just a small fraction of the cost of the upgrades we made to that reservoir. And I wonder, what is the rationale for that partial? Is that just the amount of debt service for this year that we paid off, so we own a fraction of our loan? Or what is going on there?
Yeah, so what page again was that you were looking at?
Page 6, capital assets.
Gotcha, okay. Okay, yeah, so under this is part of the management discussion and analysis report. So under capital assets, within the MD&A, you're required to communicate the activity that occurred just during this fiscal year.
Right.
So during 2022, and maybe I can expand that a little bit, it only pertains to since you're on the cash basis, this represents the capital outlay that was incurred by the district just for this year under audit. So it doesn't cover the full cost. It's only looking at the activity during the current fiscal year.
That's kind of a useless number. Without that kind of a qualification behind it, it really begs the question.
Yeah, and I think it's further explained, you know, when we get back to the footnotes, I think on page 15, we've got that whole section under, we have the Reservoir 3 landslide remediation and seismic upgrade, where it provides the information to the reader as far as, you know, this is what the total project cost is, this is what the interest rate is going to be, the maturity. So it gives the reader information on what the total project cost was and then the type of repayment. We could expand page 6 to show something like we could show a beginning balance and then amounts added to the project.
Yes, something like that would be more informative.
Okay. Yeah, I'll flag that and we'll change that.
Thank you very much. Otherwise, it begs the question that I just asked you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And on a related note, I'm just wondering, and you may want to think about this before you answer it. We have some other serious long-term capital projects that we need to find sources of funding for. And I think Janine in her report would talk about steps that are being taken in that regard. But is there a figure out there that a district of our size with our resources should not exceed in terms of indebtedness, like the $3 million loan we have from the state right now?
Yeah, I can research that for you. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think there are some general benchmarks based upon what type of entity you are. So let me make myself a note and I'll get you that information. I'll forward it to Janine.
Perfect.
Yeah. Ordinarily I want to say that I know your situation is probably a little bit more unique in that you guys don't assess and collect property taxes.
No.
So I know that there's different rules related to whether or not you as an entity are assessing property tax and collecting property taxes as opposed to, you are a business type activity. So you are assessing water service fees. But yeah, I can get that information to Janine to forward it on to you.
Thank you.
I don't have that number on the top of my head. Perfect.
Grant, you had a question.
Yeah, I do. Thanks, Chris. I'll give Russ a sec here to finish taking this.
I'm ready.
Awesome. So on page 16 of the report where it goes over the new GASB statement 87 for leases, I'm assuming we're going to see that on audit reports in the future, but since we use a cash basis of accounting, we're not going to have to consider that for moving into the future with the lease and stuff, right? For the district. Okay.
Yeah. So since you guys are on the cash basis, you're basically still a pay as you go.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. So it's strictly operating lease, pay as you go. The other entities that are under GAAP, they do have to make adjustments to their balance, the quote unquote balance sheet, where they have to amortize that intangible asset depreciation, but it's amortizing that and then just refiguring the obligation under the lease obligation, just coming up with what the new present value is, which in effect is an interest component of that as well. But yeah, for you guys, it's strictly pay as you go, operating lease. So I think like with next year's footnote disclosures, a lot of this will just go away, and we'll provide information, probably just what's down there at the bottom as far as amortizing the lease. This would be the information that would be required, but again, you're not following it in looking at the accounting and reporting on your quote unquote balance sheet.
Awesome. Super. Thank you.
Any other questions for Russ? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'll make the changes. I'll get them over to Jean, and then once we get the thumbs up, we can go ahead and issue the report.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have a good evening.
You too. Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you. Bye. You too.
Okay, we are on to public comment.
Chair Roth?
Yes.
Before we do that, I'd just like to, for the record, congratulate our general manager, Jane Casey, for her outstanding work of prepping all the financial records to get a glowing report like that from our accountant. That's awesome, and way to go, Janine. Thank you for your work.
Yeah.
Much.
I just want that in the record.
Okay. John, did you have any comments to make?
I did not.
Okay, thank you. Review and approval of the minutes from July 25th. Any additions or corrections?
I move we accept the minutes as drafted.
Okay. Motion by Jim.
I'll second.
Who seconded it?
Grant.
Grant. Okay, thank you. Moved and seconded that we approve the minutes as presented. All those in favor, raise your hand.
Aye.
Okay, it's unanimous. They are approved. Monthly district report, Janine.
As we start out the monthly report, there's been no changes in the capital improvement project.
Janine, you're gonna have to speak louder, dear.
Okay. As we start out the general manager's report, there has been no changes on the capital improvements for DMAR Way and Tamara. We expect the project to start next month in September. No changes on the well one standby generator, other than the drafting invitation to bid for the pad will be expected next month. The fire hydrant 49 on Tuolumne was replaced and completed. As I had told Commissioner McGurra when he was in the office, we had Gregory Pacific do the work. We wanted to bring them back, and they did an outstanding job. They couldn't have done any better. Very impressed by their quality of work on that hydrant. The grant submission for the capital improvement projects of Business Oregon has been drafted by Bob Willis of RH2. It's in the final stages, and I should have that ready to review on my desk next week. One thing I did want to add that just came in today, so I could not add this onto our report, is I briefed the board last month that due to our water conservation program and that we're on the state radar, it had been 10 years since we had our leak detection survey. So I commissioned that survey to be done, and it was going to be done somewhere between the end of September and December. I was notified this afternoon that they have a break in their schedule, actually. So they're going to be on site this Thursday, and they'll do the leak detection on Thursday, Friday, and Tuesday, and possibly Wednesday if they need that fourth day. So it starts on Thursday. We'll get the results about 2 weeks later. So I should hopefully have the results to brief to the board at the September meeting.
Janine?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that's great to have that done during the irrigation season instead of afterwards. So
yes, yeah, it couldn't have worked out any better. So Kate is our point of contact. I did hire the same company that did it 10 years ago. So I couldn't be any luckier for us to have this happening this week.
They're starting on Thursday, you say?
Mm-hmm, yeah, they'll be here Thursday, Friday, Tuesday, and then possibly Wednesday for their fourth day.
Okay, I'm everybody knows I'm a technical geek. Well, it goes with being an engineer, I guess. But I'd love to watch them do their thing, see what, because I know there's been a lot of advances in the technology they apply. I just, for my own professional interest, I like to see that. Are they going to have any kind of a schedule for you, Janine?
Yes, they're. I just found out this about 1 o'clock this afternoon. I emailed him back that I want to meet here in the office at 8 o'clock. I want to get the scope of their work. I have it written, but I want to verbally talk with them what they're going to do, how they're going to approach it. So any of the commissioners, as long as we don't exceed, we can't have three or more who want to come in and sit for that. I expect it's going to be an in and out because they really need to be out in the field detecting our leaks.
When are you going to do that?
On Thursday morning. So it's tentatively scheduled for 8 o'clock. But then I can also, anybody interested in going out with them or looking at what they do as they get their schedule of what they're going to do here at the district, I can reach out to anybody who's interested to tell them their availability. I plan to be on site as well. I've never got to do one. I've read enough leak detection reports, but well, I've never, ever had the opportunity to actually see it in action. So I definitely plan to be out there with them.
If Larry's going to go out, I'd just as soon just hear it from him. You know, I'm not going to know what's going on anyway. So I don't, you know, I won't contribute to a quorum. Don't worry about that. I'd rather hear from Larry. So,
all right.
Could I find out when they're going to do our street so I can just observe from a distance?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Actually, that would satisfy me as well. If I can just see when they're going to do River Run.
All right. Let me make a note on that.
And they're starting, they're having your kickoff on Thursday the 1st?
Yes.
Great. Good. That's good news.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, I'm free Thursday morning, but I have family arriving for a family visit Thursday afternoon. So.
All right. Maybe I can steer them into a certain quadrant of the district, on Wednesday. I want to see what they're going to do, how they're going to dissect it and how they're going to approach the different sections. Again, this is my first time, so it's a very much a learning opportunity for me, and I'm very eager. The valve maintenance and exercising program was done during this past month, as I reported to you, the number of valves identified, the number of valves we exercised, and the remaining valves to exercise. Today, the operators were out with the valve exerciser and our wet back, and was able to do, of the 20 that were remaining, the 15 were able to do 7 of those. We also identified 2 additional valves that we were never aware of. So I believe our valve count at the total will be 347. Again, this is in the final stages. All of them will be exercised, and I'll do a final report for the September board meeting.
That's so excellent.
You
plan to do that annually, don't you, Janine?
Semi-annual.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then the hydrants are semi-annual.
Let's see. Again, semi, that means every six months. Okay.
Twice a year. And as I, have learned more and more about, running a water district, you can tell the premier water districts, and they are your districts that are doing this twice a year. They're out there and they have their valves identified. And I went over to Wallison Valley and got to see their map and came back, and I've got the guys tasked with doing our map very similar. So they were working on that today. And I'm excited, when that will get done in September, because I think that it will, enhance the operations of the district, that there's going to be no more questions on these valves, where they're at. We actually, in addition to a large map that encompasses all 347 valves, then they're broken down by the individual valves, and it's measured exactly how far they are from different features out in the street. So you should be able to readily identify. I am going to get with Clackamas County and Lake Oswego, because we do have valves that have been paved over, and I need to work with them to get those valves exposed. But I'm waiting until the remaining 20 of these valves all get identified, they're ready to go, and then I'll reach out and start that process to complete our program for the year. The backflow program, I wish I had better news to report. I'm a little disappointed in that we only have 41% of backflows tested. We did door tags that went out in August, over 300 to our customers that hadn't had reports in. And I understand some customers are still on schedule. And every call that we get, I try to use that as an educational purpose for our customers, and stressing that as a residential backflow customer, you want to get your tests done between January and June. The backflow vendors use July through December to test their commercial clientele, banks, malls, anybody with an irrigation system in a commercial setting. I hope to have better stats on this for our September meeting, and we'll see where we go from there. And we are working with some customers on an individual basis that have had some issues with actual locating, though, because you have to understand property changes, sells, so you get new homeowners in there that aren't aware of their backflow and aren't aware of their requirements. But that's something that, you know, goes with the game, and that's something we, you know, will experience every year. On the back of your report, you'll see the production and consumption report. And I was so excited, but I'm like tempering my excitement in the 6.2% unaccounted loss, because this is a reflection of the flow meters that were replaced at well one and well two. So I don't want to get in that cushiony zone right now. I'm holding judgment until I see our October numbers, but I'm hoping this is indicative that we've corrected the problem and we're going to be where the state wants us to be. I didn't even call Carrie when I got the numbers, Carrie Cope up at the state, because I didn't want to kind of, I think, taint the water and spoil something. So we'll know more in October when we actually see our numbers, and hopefully this will be right in line with where we're at now. So I'm keeping my fingers and toes crossed until October numbers come out. Customer assistance request. We had 76 requests, and we had one emergency call out over the weekend due to a service leak line on Tualatin Court. Our August billing revenue are up, and that's because, of course, our price increase went up. So the revenue of $193,352 is our projection, our revenue for August billing. Safety training that we completed is identified there. The last thing that I wanted to address that's not on the report is about the Zoom meetings. As you all know, the state of Oregon cracked down, and you have to make your meetings available to the public. So what that means is that, just like we have Mr. McPherson with us this afternoon, we use Zoom. A lot of the districts use Zoom because your customers can log in, they can see you, et cetera. And it does cost about $800 a year. We're going to need Zoom regardless, because I have meetings with developers, different engineering contractors when they're doing projects out here for the district. And so Zoom, I need it anyway, and that's not an expense that will go away. The other thing I've looked into, because there's been some interest in meeting back again in person, there's a program called Dialpad, and a lot of the districts use this that they started to use this, but then three of the district that I checked with, of the six of them, went back to Zoom meetings because that's what they preferred. And they actually got some feedback from attendees of their meetings. So Dialpad is where we pay money for a number that's dedicated to the district. It would be a phone number that customers use, commissioners use if you're traveling, and it'll stay the same for the tenure of which we have a contract with them. We actually need two numbers, because we need our regular dial pad number for our regular meetings, and we would need a second dial pad number for those rare occasions that we go into executive session. So the pros of dial pad is that we could meet in person back here in the office, and we would have the phone on the desk, and our customers would call in, and they could hear what's going on. They can't see us like they can see us now. We'd also have to have a separate recorder next by to the phone in order to record the meeting, because Dialpad does not record. It is an option if the board wants to meet in person. We could also use Zoom at our meetings if we were going to meet in person, but it would require me to purchase some type of a laptop, because we don't have an office laptop, or a small computer, something that's rigged up over on the conference table, where I would still have to be able to manipulate and manage if anybody's calling in or wanting to see. We'd have to set up cameras if we wanted them to see us like they're seeing us now. So that's an option. So before I move forward with any of these, I just wanted to get the consensus of the board on what is the board looking for at future meetings.
Jim, you had your hand up.
Yeah, a question for you, Janine, or whatever. The state law that requires access now, the type of access we have now, does it state that it has to be audio and video?
No, it's only audio.
Okay,
they do not need video.
Okay, great. I mean, I you know, the other board I serve on, we went and bought one of those little camera things you stick in the middle of the table.
The owl. Takes
a wide view angle or whatever.
Yeah, it's called the owl.
Well, it's not even, no, we have an owl at work. This is smaller than an owl. It looks like a little T or something like this, just sits on the table, and it kind of does this wide angle thing. And I don't ask me, I don't know the technical side to whatever, but and I don't have any strong feelings one way or the other. It would be interesting to get the public's opinion, whether they would like to see us or just hear us and then make a decision. I don't know how we would get that, but I would love to ask around. You know, I don't know what Mr. McPherson thinks, for example, if he would just like to see us or like, does he like, you know, or just hear us or whatever? Because I'm not welded to either way, so.
Mr. McPherson, would you like to see us or hear us or both?
I don't want to see you or hear you.
Well, that's easy.
I think the voice is quite sufficient.
Okay.
And if we asked people to identify themselves when they spoke, then you would know who said what.
And you would have to do that. So it would change the lens, so to speak, of our meeting. So if somebody would start speaking, Chris, you would say, Chair Roth, I'm calling the meeting to order. Like just now, I mean, I know you, I've got a camera here. I can see all of you on the motion that was made for the minutes. I actually thought that was Commissioner McGurra and not Commissioner Johnson because their voices are so close. And, but then I looked up because I'm still trying to take notes and look. So I find advantage to actually hearing us and seeing us, but that's me. And, you know, I serve at the pleasure of the board. So if you let me know what you want for your future meetings, then I can make that happen.
We have two questions, Commissioner McGurra, and then Grant, and then Sherry, you want to speak?
Yes.
So you're third in line then. Larry.
All right. Thank you, Chair Roth. I just want to relay my personal experience. I just a week ago chaired a 2.5-day meeting over in Walla Walla for my engineering society. And we have purchased an owl, and that's an amazing piece of technology. It's a little on the pricey side. It's about $1,000, but we use that. I had speakers. It's two-way speakers. You can see them on a computer screen, and you can interact with them. And I had one speaker from a place in Poland, and it was just amazing. I had also speakers from Washington, D.C., the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, various other places, and it blew me away how well that thing worked. So it's making it very seductive to go to keep remote meetings, but my preference is that we still, as a board, really need to be meeting live in person if it's safe. And I should also point out, I had 25 people in the room and about seven or eight more who were remote, and nobody's come down with COVID, thank God, knock on wood.
Grant, you're next.
Yeah, thanks. So I guess a few things. Janine, I'm interested in seeing the leak detection service work. So I'm free probably either on Friday or on Monday to check that out. So I'd love to watch that. I've seen locators do their work, but haven't seen leak detection before. So that would be neat. In regards to Zoom or what have you, we also pay for, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Janine, but we pay for Office 365 for like our email and things like that. If that includes a Microsoft Teams subscription, that since we're already paying for that with our email service, I use Teams at work and it's pretty good. I'm on Teams meetings all the time. I don't know if that's an option for the district. I don't know like what type of level of like accounts we pay for and if that includes Teams or what sort of features it includes and if it's at the same parity that what we pay for Zoom. But that could be another option too. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. That's all I have. So
thank you, Grant. Sherry?
Yeah, I'd like to encourage us to be able to see each other speak because our voices are not only communicating, but our expressions are also communicating. And so you receive more information by being able to observe visually as well as orally. So it's important to do what we need to do to have both visual and audio.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's talking about not having an audio.
No,
or, I mean, but, having a video.
I can gain more of your message by being able to visually see you.
Yeah, and nobody's talking about having an arrangement where you can't. Mm-hmm. Larry.
I just wanted to, I've had very uneven experience using Microsoft Teams. It tends to mock up a lot. And I just had a Teams meeting earlier today that I was only able to participate in about half of it. So compared to Zoom, which has been perfect in my experience, I would strongly have a preference towards Zoom. I want to make sure you heard that. That's just my opinion though.
That's my preference as well. And I do a lot on Zoom, again, with the different developers, and I have meetings all throughout the week.
Jim.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. In fact, I use four different platforms in my, you know, because of the different people I deal with. And and Larry's right. I've never had any issues with Zoom. I've never had any issues with Microsoft Teams either. But
you're lucky.
Yeah. But, you know, that's the state government's platform. So it's maybe it's a lot more powerful or something, too, than a smaller thing. You know, kind of thing. So, but I, you know, Zoom works fine. You know, there's a Citrix one that works great. There's a Google one. There's, you know, there's all kinds of them. So, you know, Zoom's fine with me too. So,
and as a point of budget, I just approved an expenditure to renew our Zoom license for ASCE, and it was $150 for a year. So, it seemed pretty reasonable.
Ours is a little bit more because of the number of we have. Of the number of attendees. So ours is about 700.
Really?
All right. So I will, plus the recording feature, it's nice to record. Then that way I just download the recording and save it. Since our meetings are required to be recorded, unless the district was going to do away with that provision, it's not required by state or any public meeting law. It's required because our district has that.
Yeah, so, Larry, I think it's based on the number of meetings.
And the number of attendees.
Yeah. So, you know, we have at least 12, more than that, at least 12.
Well, because I never know how many public's coming, I put us at 20. Mm-hmm. And then some of the meetings, you know, that I have on the emergency management, you know, I'm right up there about 12, 14. So. All right, I will research that and then get back to the board next month. So then what the consensus I'm getting is there is a desire to meet back in person and for me to investigate the OWL or some other device as such.
Good.
And then purchase a laptop. I'll need some type of a laptop to, unless you all want me to sit over here at my desk and you all be at the table.
No, I'd probably prefer to have you sit with us and do that, you know, since you're going to be presenting your reports and stuff. I think it makes sense. So
I'll go ahead then and do the research. I wanted to finish the district manager's report by the August newsletter went out. We did publicize and inform our customers of the rate increases of the two capital improvement projects that we have starting. And we also put the water conservation. Remember, we're on a two-year program with the state to be able to prove our water conservation outreach to the public. So the 6 newsletters that go out every year fulfills that requirement. I also had another article published out on the website. People going out there can look and read. So that will be a part of the newsletter in the future. There will always be a water conservation. Was there any, before I close, were there any questions on the financial reports? With no questions, Chair Roth, that concludes my report.
All right, thank you. We will move on to unfinished business. And there is none listed. On to new business, HR answers investigation, unbudgeted expenses. Commissioner McGurra.
Okay, thank you. It's very uncomfortable for me to have to bring this before the board, but anytime you have an unbudgeted expense, it requires an explanation. And we have a fiduciary responsibility to our rate, to our customers, to spend the funds that are in the approved budget. And in this case, we have, you can see the little summary sheet that, that Jane's included here. Unbudgeted expenses for the HR answers investigation totaled $4,928. And that's the only place, we don't have a line item for that. So that comes out of our reserves. And as the treasurer of this organization, that really rankles me that we're spending money that's not budgeted. And I think this is to investigate what turned out to be unfounded allegations by Commissioner Patterson, that we had to, our advice of counsel is you better investigate this. And we did that. And the report clearly says there was no merit to any of the allegations. So we're stuck with the bill here. And I don't know. I think Commissioner Patterson's conduct on this was egregious. And it puts the district in some jeopardy. And I'd like to know if there's any consideration among the board to do anything about this. And I looking at a possible solutions. Remember, we did revise our policy, board policy handbook in March of this year. And specifically item, what is it? Section 110B, item 3, board conduct. And it just says board commissioners will at all times act ethically and with integrity. And what happened in this instance wasn't ethical and certainly was no integrity. And so what can we do about it? Well, all we can do is any commissioner who violates, the last sentence that was just added this year, any commissioner that violates these standards of board conduct will be subject to a confidence vote, otherwise known as a, quote, vote of no confidence, unquote. And I think it's incumbent upon us, you know, we can't unring the bell. We've paid the money. It's water under the bridge to that extent. But to put closure on it and to put some protection to the board members, I think we ought to consider a vote of no confidence. So that this behavior is not considered conduct becoming a member of the board. What say you?
Comments from people?
I mean, this was an expense that we unanimously voted on in February of 2022 when the issue came up. So it's a $5,000 bill that, you know, probably wasn't budgeted, right? But on the other hand, what were our alternatives? I mean, it was inappropriate for Jim and I to conduct an investigation as commissioners and take on an administrative obligation, you know, and it's, you know, we have diligence to Jean to hire someone who's qualified to do that. HR Answers is qualified to do that. I mean, there are other unbudgeted expenses this past year that were far in excess of $5,000 that we've paid, you know, like our legal fees. I mean, that was in excess of what, $12,000,
$16,000? Oh, I would say, Grant, there's one significant difference there. We have a line item for legal fees. We overspent it, yes, but it's in the it's built into the budget. This was not.
So where was this drawn from in terms of the budget? Because we do have a line item for consultants, but I believe we use that for our, you know, consulting with Mark Knudsen.
Janine, do you know where we drew the money from? I'm not totally clear.
Hey, Janine, I'm sorry.
You're muted, Janine. When Russ briefed the budget and he briefed the board that we were over on material and services by $1,250, that came as part of this. So I drew the funds from the general operating fund. So the consultant fee was consultants like that I have in order to help run the district and reach out to. So there wasn't any HR consultant fee built in. And because I knew what I was going to spend on the budget, I knew that we had funds that we could use for Mark Knudsen when the board voted to hire someone to do work with the board. So this came out of general operating funds, and we were very lucky to only exceed it by $1,250.
Right. We had no idea how much they were going to charge us when we started this thing. We did authorize it as a board.
I did know how much Mark Knudsen was going to charge us, or I had a guesstimate, because he did a proposal and told us roughly what it was going to be. And Chair Roth looked at it, and I looked at it. It was in my expense purview to approve, and I did, based on direction from the board. The HR answers was not,
I serve on a couple other boards, as you probably know, and the budget is a sacrosanct thing that we live by and approve and spend a lot of focus on. And having to go cover this out of our operational, basically our reserves, our unspent reserves. Thankfully, we, through Janine's efficiencies, we've had some reserves. Pretty significant amount, actually, but I don't know. I'm not really asking for a vote of no confidence against Commissioner Patterson, but I want to go on the record, on the written record of this meeting, that I'm aghast that she said the things she said in an open meeting, that we had to spend our money, our ratepayers' money, to investigate it. And you should all be concerned about that.
Anyone have any comments?
I certainly have a comment when you're talking about throwing verbal daggers. I had a $24,000 attorney bill dealing with your accusations on censoring. So I think a lot of people need to reevaluate what they're doing and how they're doing it. And so I think a lot of corrective action can, on personal basis, can be reviewed. So when you want to throw darts, Mr. Treasurer, you need to review subject matter.
Well, I would just ask you, Sherry, have you apologized to Janine for your comments that turned out to be false?
No, I haven't.
I would just suggest that an apology is always difficult, but if it's heartfelt, it's a great way to close the door on something like this, and we can all move on.
I will not apologize.
At this point, I would like to interject. I think it's really important that all five of us sit down in an executive session and confront what our issues are. This gets difficult, and it gets more difficult, and it doesn't seem to improve. We need to figure out how we can work together, because otherwise we're spending our time and the district's money doing things that aren't productive. I really want to see us get back to a functioning board, because right now I think we are minimally functional. There's a lot of unsaid things, and I think they need to be said. And if we can do that in a civil manner, then I think we ought to do that. And I would like to do that within the next several weeks, but certainly before next month's meeting.
I would be totally open to that, Chris, and supportive of that, but that's not something I think we can do in executive session. unless we're discussing like an HR matter or something that we can't disclose to the public. I think that the nature of our discussion wouldn't fall under that. But I would be supportive of having a special meeting to kind of discuss general board culture and other things and, you know, work towards, you know, a solution of working together collectively more. I think it's needed. Yeah. And I would be willing to participate and contribute to that.
Great. Thank you, Grant.
I think it's a good idea. I think it requires use of an independent facilitator, a neutral party.
I mean, didn't we already do that with Mark Knudsen? I mean, we went over board responsibilities and roles and training, and we did do a facilitation with him.
Mm-hmm. Actually, if I could make a comment, you can meet in an executive session. It's covered under ORS 192.660, subparagraph 2, subparagraph B. So the idea of, if I'm understanding you, Chair Roth, is to consider the discipline or hear charges or complaints. So complaints against an officer, which could be a commissioner, an employee, a staff member, as long as that person does not request an open meeting. And in my opinion, this has gone on. So that there is that statute of the Oregon law where you could meet in executive session.
Jim, I see you shaking your head.
I have to agree with Grant on this. This isn't about discipline and response. We've already done all of that. That was correctly done in executive session. This is more about a general discussion about the board getting along and the like. That has really nothing to do about an individual disciplinary action or like. So I don't think we can go in executive session with this. And if you disagree, Janine, I think we need to ask somebody about that. But I tend to agree with Grant on this one. If we're going to do this, it has to be in an open session.
It doesn't. Again, I can send you all the ORS. It is to for dismissal, discipline, to hear charges or complaints. Is not Commissioner Magura bringing up a complaint?
That I what I understood that Chair Roth was proposing was nothing to do about what Larry just brought up. It was a broader thing about the culture of us working in general, not about this complaint. That's why I think that it is not an executive session.
Understood.
And just further for the record, I don't feel like I lodged a complaint. It was definitely a concern.
Got it. Understood. Then I stand corrected. And Commissioner Howell and Commissioner Johnson are correct.
Yeah. I think the reality here, we've invested HR, their assistance. I think the reality here is we're all adults. We're all capable of sitting down and having a discussion. And I certainly am welcoming that and open to that.
This is one that I think needs to be done in person.
Absolutely.
Oh, true.
I'd agree with that.
Mm-hmm. It'd be much more effective.
So do we want to set a tentative date?
So you're looking to do this before next month's regularly scheduled board meeting, Chris?
Yes.
Is that what you're envisioning?
Yes.
Could you hand me my calendar? Thank you.
What about the second full week of September?
Week of the 12th?
Yeah.
I can do it Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday.
Okay. 13, 14, or 15?
Right.
13th, I will be available the 12th and 13th, otherwise I'm out of town.
Okay.
13th works for me as long as it's in the afternoon after 4:30 p.m., so.
Okay.
13th would work for me if it's after, let me look here, 3:30.
Okay, so what do we set? Is 4:30 an okay time, Grant?
I mean,
I usually want to bump it a little later.
frankly, could we do 5? Because I typically work from 6 to 5 normally. So
okay.
If we can do it at 5, I can cut out a little early that day and it should be fine. So
okay. So we will then do it on Tuesday the 13th, and that will be at 5 o'clock.
Where do you want to meet?
At the district office.
Okay. So what are we calling this then? We're not going to take no minutes in this meeting, are we?
But we have to. It's a public meeting.
It's a special meeting, and I'll have to give a notice as appropriate. And the public is invited to attend.
Yeah, it's a public meeting.
Mm-hmm. You could just call it the special meeting and have your agenda be board relations.
And then if we're going to do it in person, Janine, do we need to incorporate a Zoom component? Like, could one of us bring our iPads and join the Zoom meeting that way and set it on the table? Or would something like that work?
I don't think I will be able to get something set up by the 13th of September. I can do my best.
Well, I'm saying that if we scheduled the Zoom meeting like we've done this one, and we just brought an iPad to the district office and had it join the meeting at the table, people could hear the conversation if there's members of the public that attend.
I would rather do a dial pad. I don't understand that. If you bring, unless it's going to be a district laptop, you can't bring a personal laptop in here.
Right, no, I'm saying a district iPad, like district iPads that were assigned, right?
I can see if I can, I'll talk with Pacific Office Automation and see what they can rig up for us.
We may have an issue with feedback.
I also need to get a recorder to be able to record. So let me get with Pacific Office Automation and see what I can set up. This, I will say that I'm all in favor of the board doing this. This is a difficult week with the leak detection. So it really only gives me about 3 days to make this happen. So I will move heaven and earth to do it, and I will get with Pacific Office Automation first thing tomorrow morning. And if it's just we do dial pad, then we do dial pad to meet the state requirements. Is that acceptable, Chair Roth?
Anybody objecting?
No, that's fine by me.
Okay. Then we'll do it that way. Is there anything else that anyone wants to bring up?
Well, wow, that'll be our first live meeting in over 2 years.
I know. Yeah. We should have cake.
Celebrate.
How about it's 5 o'clock, it's happy hour. How about I bring a bottle of wine?
That doesn't Certainly. Sound bad right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll bring a bottle of my brother-in-law's wine.
If there is nothing else to discuss, I will adjourn the meeting at 5:55. Thank you all.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay.
We'll see you on the 13th.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thanks. Bye.